friends. Welcome to Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik. We are glad to have you with us today. We have an important program ahead of us. We are very grateful to finally have Brian Gerrish with us. If you're not familiar with the work and research that Brian has done about the organization called Common Purpose, this is definitely the time to get into it. We're going to go over some of the background on Common Purpose, but also go through some of the recent developments in regards to Brian's investigations. There's a few excellent videos available on Video Google and YouTube that goes into great depths of this organization. Presentations, these are, of Brian Gerrish. You can simply search for Common Purpose or Brian Gerrish on either Video Google or YouTube for more about these videos. But just to give you kind of an official phrase, I guess, even from Wikipedia here, it says that Common Purpose UK is an influential educational charity delivering a range of leadership training programs to decision makers drawn from all sectors of society. A lot can be said about that right there, and we're going to go into some of this here today. I want to mention that Brian is based in the UK. He has a background in the military, and he's primarily been looking into what has been happening with Common Purpose in the UK, but this is an organization that exists in many countries, primarily on the European continent, but also elsewhere, and sometimes even under a different name. And in one of Brian's presentations, he mentioned that he was working in Plymouth when he first heard of Common Purpose, and he's been fighting to expose their agenda and digging up information on this organization since that point. And also one final thing I want to mention is that Brian Gerrish will be upcoming and one of the speakers at the Alternative View 2 conference in London. And this is this coming Friday, the 29th of May. And I've talked with Ian Crane, who's behind AV2 conference, and there are still few tickets available for you guys who are close in the area or have the ability to come on short notice. And Brian Gerrish is one of these talks that you definitely don't want to miss. So if you want to know more about that, head on over to thealternativeview.co.uk or avii.co.uk for all the details, tickets, speakers, schedules, and so much more there. So with that, welcome to the program, Brian. Very nice of you to come on today.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for such a kind introduction.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it, Brian. We know how busy you are, so I just want to get things rolling here as soon as possible. And maybe for those who haven't heard about Common Purpose, maybe you can just lay the background for us. I know you've done this many times, Brian, but it will be good for people who have no idea what the Common Purpose is.
Okay, well, if I do it very quickly, if I go back to about the year 2000, maybe a little bit before 2000, 2001, I'd been working in Plymouth. I'd already left the Royal Navy, and I was starting to get what I call comfortable, which is that I had a share of a business, and I was starting to earn some money. And together with another ex-Navy colleague, we decided to see whether we could help one of the local communities in Plymouth in an area called Devonport, and that is close to the Royal Naval Dockyard, and over a number of years it's suffered as an area and the community has suffered from long-term unemployment, particularly amongst younger people. And we came up with the idea of trying to introduce skills training to help get younger people back into work, and we were going to do this by getting them involved with the repair and build of small wooden boats, which seem to fit into the maritime theme of that area. And we started the project. We got a lot of support from local people, and initially we were getting help from the city itself, so from Plymouth City Council, and we were also getting help from organisations which we know as Quangos in UK. They're basically bodies which are not part of the official government structure. They sit to one side, but they're overwhelmingly funded by government money. So we started to move the project forward, and at a point where we were being encouraged to bid for some grant money to help us set up the project properly, suddenly stopped. And this was extremely strange, and we really didn't know quite what had happened, but we decided to carry on with the project without any form of help from the public sector. And within a short space of time, we started to receive intimidating phone calls and emails, and that was to escalate in time to quite unpleasant threats and death threats and threats to business colleagues and family members. And when we started to investigate what was causing this, a gentleman one evening said that he thought the problem was common purpose. And I was very intrigued with this because I'd never heard of the organisation. But we then started to ask questions, and we discovered the organisation Common Purpose operating in Plymouth, but it was under the surface. We'd never heard of it before, but we found colleagues and many other people involved with it. Once we really started to investigate, we were quite stunned to find that a charity, Common Purpose is registered as a charity, but it was recruiting people as future leaders, and it had them installed in all sectors of the city. So they were in the local council, they were in the police. At one stage, the head teacher of every school in the city was Common Purpose trained. They were in the hospital, the Chamber of Commerce, and some of the larger companies. And what it seemed to represent, and obviously in the early days we were learning, but what it seemed to represent was that a network of future leaders with a particular political agenda had been installed into the city. And what they were able to do by networking and working together was to steer the political and social agenda of the city. And if I jump forward a bit, a lot of work over several years then revealed that this system was actually working throughout UK.
And what was it in your particular work that they did not agree with, or why were you? Do you know why you were being stopped in the things that you and your partner were trying to set up?
Well, in the beginning we didn't understand that. So that wasn't clear at all. But what we came to realise was that Common Purpose is creating so-called leaders that are working to create a new type of society. And their vision of society is not based on the key foundations that we all believe in at the moment. And so what we began to understand later was that Common Purpose is working behind the scenes to gradually help break down the established social and political structure in UK. And what we were doing in a local area was actually reinforcing the status quo. We wanted to help people get back into work. We wanted to give them skills. We wanted to start to give them power and respect back in their own community. But what we now know is very much the Common Purpose agenda is to actually be pulling apart society, to destabilize it. So we got in the way, effectively.
Tell us a little bit about Julia Middleton, who's behind Common Purpose. She founded this back in 1989, is that correct?
Well, it was Julia Middleton who claims to have founded Common Purpose, and she claims to have initially started it with Anita Roddick, who was the lady who founded The Body Shop, which is a very famous chain of shops selling natural healthcare and beauty products. And that was in about 1985. But the interesting thing is that Julia Middleton seems to appear on the scenes from nowhere. And within a few months, she has £500,000 to start the Common Purpose programs. Now, if you talk to any ordinary people who've been involved in charitable work, raising money is very difficult, and it's certainly very, very difficult to raise sums of about 500,000 look into Julia's background, you find that she was previously involved with the Work Foundation, and she was also involved with the organisation Demos, both of which are highly political organisations. She was born in Britain, but her little biography says that she was educated in France, and she spent quite a bit of time in America, I think, where her father was working.
Mm.
So she's a very interesting lady, that she seems to pop straight out of the political network into a charity, and then suddenly she's got a very large sum of money.
Absolutely. And do you know at this point, Brian, where this money primarily have been coming from?
Well, we know some of it, because Common Purpose is quite keen on boasting about money. We know, for example, that a large amount of money comes out of the major banks, of which Deutsche Bank, the German bank Deutsche Bank, is one of the key contributors. But in her own books and papers, Julia Middleton says that in the early days, some people gave such large amounts of money that she had to return it because she felt that that would buy Common Purpose. So when you read the story about the funding of Common Purpose, we know that a lot of money came from major banks. We know that money has come from major corporations, whether it's British Telecom or oil companies. What we see is her receiving money from what we will call is the elite institutions.
Hmm. And just as a side note here as well, you mentioned Demos. I quickly looked into this and found it back in 1993 by a former editor of a magazine or a journal called Marxism Today, from the Communist Party of Great Britain, isn't that right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And Demos is of particular interest to us now because it was used as one of the primary think tanks to help push forward policy for the Tony Blair New Labour government.
Yes.
And it is absolutely fascinating to watch Demos being used now to form policy for both the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives in the UK. So we know that Demos is one of the key players in the background, and Julia Middleton obviously had a strong grounding in that Marxist background.
Do you think it's primarily a socialist kind of ideology behind this, or is it more... I know that you talked about this, that it seems to be kind of a merger between capitalist on one side, but also socialist on another, and seems to be merging into this new kind of synthesis between these two sides, right?
Are you talking about the ideology for Common Purpose or Demos?
Well, I guess we can talk about it in terms of what Common Purpose is doing and where they're heading.
Yes, well... A synthesis is a very good description, because if you look at them, you get hints of straightforward communism. But if you look at it from the mixing with a corporate elite, and Julia Middleton is certainly in love with international bankers, I'll come back to that, you start to see that it's got fascist, an almost fascist side to it. Now, from my own research, and I'm very happy to be corrected by people who know more than I do about political ideology, but when I've researched it, I start to come towards Gramsci, and Gramsci produced a very soft form of fascism, which was particularly keen on merging the corporate elitists with the political system. So you gradually brought the two together. But the other thing which leads us to believe that Gramsci is important is that we've seen Gramsci's name being used by Demos. And we also know that Gramsci was one of the proponents of destroying Western society by gradually attacking and destroying the key pillars of that society. So you would undermine the establishment figures and institutions. You would attack the police. You would ridicule the politicians. And you would remove any sense of history and the sense of national culture from a particular country. So Gramsci was one of the people that started to advocate the destruction of Western democracies by a slow creeping method instead of the guns and bullets that we've seen over the years. And I can say to you that I am absolutely sure, and if I'm allowed to say, using my military training and experience, I'm absolutely sure that what we're witnessing in Britain today is the destruction of the country from the inside. I have no doubt of this.
And who do you think would be, in that sense, interested in doing this? Is this a way for them to break down the ideology and also the sense of nationalism that many English people and Britons have today in regards to the agenda to merge in better, I guess, from their point of view, into the EU? Or why do you think they're doing it?
Well, the EU is certainly a key part of it. I think we'll have to be quite focused in how we deal with things a step at a time, because there's a lot of interconnecting pieces here. We know the common purpose is pro-European Union, because if we look at all the courses they run, we look at their promotional material, we look at who they invite to do talks and talk to graduates, which are their trainees, there is a wealth of material showing that they are pushing people towards the European Union. The European Union is a wonderful idea. The breaking down of national borders is wonderful. The mixing of people across borders is wonderful. And particularly in their material for children, they're putting in children's minds the idea that it doesn't really matter where you live, because as long as you're within the European Union, everybody is a European. Now, some of the listeners may be thinking to themselves, well, this is quite an innocent idea. But I'm going to say you have to start to put this ideology in with other things that we're seeing. The next part of it is that in the common purpose training, there is a great push for diversity, for mixing people of different cultures and backgrounds. And again, when you look at this, first of all, this seems a good idea. All of us would say we want people to get on harmoniously. But what Julia Middleton points at, and indeed she says this in her book Beyond Authority, is that after people have done the common purpose training with its heavy base of diversity training, people don't want to work in homogenous groups. They don't want to stay working in the same groups that they were working in before. They want to move out beyond that. And so what Common Purpose is starting to do is to get people to leave the boundaries of their own establishment and start to move across boundaries. And where this becomes dangerous is if you have somebody who's a senior figure within an organization. Let's say you have a police officer. If you start to promote that person and encourage them to work with, say, a member of the local public services or the local city authority, you have to start to say, well, where does responsibility and accountability, where does that start and end? If the police officer is working within his own organization, he's got well-defined limits of responsibility, and therefore he can be fully accountable. But when the police officer starts to work with a group of other public officials within partnerships, and particularly where meetings are held behind closed doors, then all of a sudden it's not easy to see where perhaps more importantly, the lines of accountability start to become blurred.
Hmm.
So common purpose has been gently building up networks of trained people, which are in all sectors of society, but particularly the public sector. And these people are working under the surface in a networking arrangement to gently implement their new political agenda. So it's very slow, it's very gentle, but it's hidden. So the ordinary person, unless they know what they're looking for, has absolutely no idea that a totally new political agenda is being pushed into the system, into society.
Hmm. Very interesting. I want to talk a little bit more in a little bit while here about this training and the way that they're training certain leaders who seem to groom even people from a young age and take them into the organization to become future leaders and so forth. But before we do that, Brian, tell us more about the international bankers. You mentioned Julia Middleton's love for international bankers. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think actually it'd be quite useful. I've got in front of me on my desk Julia Middleton's book, which is called Beyond Authority, Leadership in a Changing World. And in it, there are a number of quotes, and also the work gives you an insight into Julia Middleton's mind, which is fascinating. But she quotes Banks a lot, and if I look at this one section in front of me, she's saying that Hans Reckers is a board member of Deutsche Bundesbank, and he introduced me to this East German expression. And the useful expression she's talking about is useful idiot.
Hmm.
So Julia Middleton is proudly boasting that a German banker is using a term useful idiot. And she's so impressed with this term that she takes up on it in the book that there are people out there, they're just idiots, but we can use them.
Hmm.
And in the same section of this book, which I find quite extraordinary, she starts to quote about von Papen and Hitler.
Hmm.
So she's talking about in the 1930s, I'll just read you this. In the 1930s, for example, von Papen was Hitler's vice chancellor in the Weimar Republic. Apparently, even on his deathbed, he was convinced that he'd been right to stay in post. He thought he could control Hitler and steer Germany through the chaos of the early 1930s. I suspect that history judges him differently. Now, we've got a section on Hitler. We're talking East German bankers, and we are using the fact that some members of the community don't really understand what's happening, but they can be used as useful idiots.
Mm.
Now, if we go to the other end of the scale, Julia Middleton is suddenly talking about expert idiots. And she said this is another useful German expression and a variant on the useful idiot. These are leaders who know a huge amount about a small, sometimes tiny core. So I'm giving you two things in one go, but if we go through the book, which is Julia Middleton's personal work, we are seeing constant references to banks and elitist people within the European Commission, or within major companies, and certainly within the financial institutions.
Hmm.
In some of the common purpose literature, until fairly recently, they were boasting about how they've been using people from Lehman Brothers to come and educate school children. Now, having watched the total collapse and chaos and fraud and corruption within the international banking scene, I hardly think people from Lehman Brothers are good examples for young children in school, but Julia Middleton apparently thinks so.
Mm-hmm. How about that? It's just incredible. And you know, again, go ahead.
Well, if I just pull out a couple of other bits in the book,
yeah.
She clearly doesn't like. She clearly doesn't like. British, I find this fascinating. She's very scathing about the British. We're warlike, we're very cold. And she criticises us for the fact that we apparently take tinned foods on holiday with us.
Hmm.
Now, I've spent quite a bit of time abroad, and I've lived in Holland for 2 years, and I've thoroughly enjoyed all of that, and I've seen a lot of other British people abroad, and I'm intrigued that Julia Middleton picks up what she thinks are national attributes from obviously one or two people who we wouldn't consider to be the norm.
Hmm.
She's quite scathing about white males. And you get the impression that this lady is quite bitter about existing society. And I think this helps to show that she's actually working to help create a new society.
Hmm. And I definitely want to talk more about that later on as well, what that new society is going to look like, if they actually are going to be able to plan out their plans that they have. But let's go back a little bit, Brian, and talk about this training or indoctrination, almost, we can call it. I mean, you've alluded to that as well, that you've raised this question, what type of training do they actually go through? Is it brainwashing? I know that in one of your presentations, you talked about different people who have approached you and talked about the way that they didn't like the way they were feeling afterwards when they've done some of these seminars or joined some of these training programs and so forth. Is there mind control in one way going on here, or what? How do you think that they're doing this? How are they training and educating people?
Right. Well, I think I'll say first of all that in the beginning we didn't really understand what we were looking at. What we had experienced was a group of people who were connected by the fact that they were common purpose members who were working against us. So I'm talking here about our little project. But we were able to see that people had communicated to our disadvantage, that emails had been sent to our disadvantage. So you've got the picture of people who were working against you. And we knew that Common Purpose was basically running these training courses. The main course at that stage was called The Matrix, which is an interesting name.
Very interesting.
And for somebody to do The Matrix course, they would go away to perhaps a small hotel or a small discreet venue with overnight accommodation, and they would do a 48-hour slot with Common Purpose. And then following that, they would do one day a month for a year. Now, the first thing that we learnt was that you couldn't just go and do the course. The way it worked was within an area, Common Purpose set up a small group of people called the advisory board. This may be 6, 7, 8, what they term senior Common Purpose people. And those people are on the lookout for suitable candidates to train. So the way the thing works is that somebody will be approached. We've been looking at you and we think that you're doing some great work in society, and we wonder whether you would be interested to get involved and do a Common Purpose course. And if they are in the public sector, the fees for that course, which if I go back at sort of about 5 years, were £3,500 roughly, plus tax. So we can say that a course cost about £5,000. And that's a lot of money.
Mm.
And people were clearly being headhunted as suitable candidates for Common Purpose. Now, some of them all of them would go through a selection process where they were asked to fill in forms talking about their personal likes, dislikes, their professional desires, objectives, goals. So quite a lot of personal and professional information was collected about the potential trainees. And then the Common Purpose Office Advisory Board would select those people that it felt were the best candidate. Now, we knew that was going on then. We can prove it overwhelmingly now because we've got all the documentary evidence showing how this system works. So a key thing is that people don't just do the course. They don't just knock on Common Purpose's door and say, we'd like to be trained. Common Purpose comes and finds them. Mm. And when it has found a potential trainee, they then get a screening. Now, what I began to realize as we looked into this in more detail is that this first screening is very important because what they're actually doing is starting to make judgments about the person and their personality. So they want to know whether they are they're go-getters, whether they want to get on, whether they're ambitious, whether they are intelligent, whether they're good leaders anyway, and whether they've got power and control, particularly power and influence over financial budget. Mm. Now, if somebody gets lots of ticks in the box from that psychological profiling, then they're invited on the Common Purpose course. Now, we, or a colleague of mine, was also doing research, and this is one of the things that I have been challenged on time and time again by people trying to undermine the evidence that we have. Mm. I've always said the same thing. I have a colleague who visited areas of the Common Purpose website, and on that website there were connected with the website rather, there were documents talking about how Common Purpose was going to take over cities, and it was going to do this by selecting and controlling a few key people in each city. Mm. And if you think about it, this is quite a feasible thing. If the local mayor is on side, is Common Purpose trained, if the head of police, if the head of the city council, if the head of the hospital, if people within the education system, key people, have all been brought online with Common Purpose, and they are working together for a common cause, then it is quite possible for those people to actually steer and manipulate the agenda in society.
Yes.
Now, if I come back to the training, we realized that people who'd been Common Purpose trained were not acting normally, in as much, in very simplistic terms, they were quite aggressive. They would lie to you, to your face, when you ask questions. Are you connected with this person? Are you trying to do this? They would lie. Mm. And they would also falsify documentation. And I can tell you that we're now in the happy position that we can show that this is still going on with Common Purpose. Mm. But we have to ask a question. Why would people want to lie to you? Why would they want to falsify documentation in order to cover up for Common Purpose?
Right, right.
I got part of an answer to this by the fact that fairly early on, I had several people brought to me. In the early days, they happened to all be ladies. But these ladies, if I take one of them as an example, she was young, 29, intelligent, professional. She'd done a Common Purpose course, but not felt very comfortable with it. In her organization, she started to discover that her boss was making strange decisions, and she knew that if she carried out his decisions, the result was going to be disaster or not good. So she gradually tried to challenge him, and eventually he turned on her. And apart from making improper suggestions, you would get on better if you slept with me, or you'd get on better if you were a card-carrying member of the Labour Party. What began to spook her was that everywhere she went for help when she was being victimised, she was turned away, and those people were Common Purpose situation that a woman had done the training, had fallen foul of the organisation, but then found colleagues would turn on her.
Yeah.
So again, we get the impression of people acting quite strangely. Now, with this particular lady, when we were able to calm her down, and we said to her, you've done this course, you did a 48-hour course, what did you actually do on the course?
Yeah.
We were amazed that she couldn't tell us in any clear detail. She talked about arriving at the venue. She remembers having cups of coffee and talking to people. And then she described playing games. And when we said, well, what sort of games were they? She would be very vague. There were games where we had to write our profession on a paper plate. And we had groups. And we did things. But this was an educated professional woman. Mm. And she couldn't tell us about 6 months after she'd done the course very much about what had actually taken place. So this was the start of a clue where we were seeing people acting out of character, being aggressive, lying, victimizing a person. And then we also had a person who'd done the course who didn't seem to be able to remember much about it. And that was the basis that I began to research, and I began to get other people who were helping me on this. And that's when we began to understand more about actually how Common Purpose was doing the training process.
Hmm. And Brian, does this in any way tie into some of the new developments that you briefly told me about before the program about NLP or neuro-linguistic programming?
Well, it does. As we researched, it became obvious to us that something was being done to the graduates which was changing their perceptions. I was approached by a gentleman who was extremely upset. He was about 40, 45 years old, and he told me a story about his wife getting involved with Common Purpose, and he described seeing her personality change. And he said it was very slow, and at one stage he thought his wife was well, in that possibly she was a little bit depressed. She went to the doctor. The doctor couldn't find anything really wrong with her, but his wife became distant from him. Now, this was a very happy marriage. They'd been married about 30 years. And the man said to me, I just watched my wife change.
Mm.
And eventually, he discovered that his wife was having an affair with another man, who he knew was also a graduate of Common Purpose.
Mm.
Now, again, I can feel perhaps listeners are saying, yes, but this is only one example. But we started to get more examples which were pointing to the fact that the course was doing something with people's minds and with their personalities. Now, I've never done this over a telephone interview before, but I'm going to try and do it, and I hope it comes out okay. But I knew a lady locally who had been a close friend, and the families had known each other very closely for about 21 years. And on one occasion, I asked her husband about Common Purpose, and he denied being involved. I subsequently discovered he was involved. So that meant that somebody that I knew as a close friend for 21 years was prepared to lie to cover up their involvement in Common Purpose.
Mm.
The lady herself was booked onto a Common Purpose course, and I waited until a few days after she'd done the 48-hour residential course. And I called her quite late, about 10:45 in the evening, to ask her some questions about Common Purpose. And I had prepared some questions which were designed to be a little bit prickly, to test her a little bit. So the first question I asked was, if it cost £1,500 to do the course. Didn't that make it rather elitist? Didn't that make it difficult for people on lower incomes to do the course?
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me a very carefully worded answer, but the substance of her answer was that, well, common purpose was for a better class of person because it was about future leaders.
Mm.
So that was an interesting reply.
Yeah.
I then said to her, were there any coloured people on the course? Now, I know, I'm saying to you today, I know perfectly well that coloured people do the common purpose course, but I was interested to see what she said.
Mm.
And she told me that there weren't any coloured people on her course, but she was adamant that they did common purpose training. But this got her a little bit prickly.
Mm.
And I asked a couple more questions, and then eventually she said this to me, and I will try and repeat it exactly how it was said to me.
Right.
And I'm going to say, including the stuttering. She said, Brian, it's now 11 o'clock and you've asked me all these questions about common purpose. And I don't know why you've asked me these questions, but I have been on a wonderful course and I've met some wonderful people and well, I am ready to take my place in society.
God.
Now that response told me that my long-term friend was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
It was an extraordinary reply. Now, from that point on, I started to research training, and I started to look at what many people will know as mind control.
Right.
And I started to look at everything from religious cults to the Moonies, and I found that there was a huge amount of material written about it, and I began to see similarities between the common purpose training and these other cults. But what I could see was that common purpose was training people in a very mild, sophisticated way. We are common purpose, the charity. We are about diversity. We're about creating future leaders. We are about empowering society. It was all very reasonable stuff.
Yeah.
But what we knew is that within the 48-hour training, groups of people were being manipulated in front of each other, and the common purpose facilitators had the prior knowledge of each candidate, because each candidate had gone through this psychological screening that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Now, eventually, our research started to draw us towards neuro-linguistic programming. And at that point, we started to get the uneasy feeling that what we were actually watching was neuro-linguistic programming being used to actually change the social and political views of groups of people.
Mm.
And I can tell you that as time has gone on, we are understanding more and more and more about the power of neuro-linguistic programming. For those who've never heard the term before, it was created back in the early 80s, I think that's the right time frame, by a chap called Bandler. And you essentially had a psychologist, hypnotist, teamed up with a computer programmer. And they started to pull apart people's thought processes and to analyze them in terms of a computer program running. But although neuro-linguistic programming has a fancy name, the neuro-linguistic experts who are now talking to me have explained that neuro-linguistics is actually a form of hypnosis.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But what you are doing is delivering that hypnosis in a very gentle and sophisticated way so that the average person would have no idea their thought processes have been interfered with. Now, Common Purpose as an organisation has put up on a website, which they've got as www.commonpurpose.net, they've actually stated that it's complete nonsense to say that they're involved in any form of brainwashing. But what they quoted clearly on that site was that they used behavioural learning techniques, and they quote a gentleman called Kolb. Now, you or anybody else can do the research for themselves, because if you go and start to look at what sort of work Kolb was doing, what he was clearly doing was using deep psychology in order to change people's behaviours, and in particular to break them out of traditional organisational environments in order to move them across, to transform them into a new environment. And this is really the meat of the mind control bit, that we have Common Purpose selecting people, putting them through a training process, which at a minimum means that they consider themselves to be an elitist new leader. And then within a city, for example, those new leaders are meeting out of sight of the wider public in order to decide and push forward new social and political initiatives. It's a very dangerous mix of things, basically.
It sounds very much like a cult, as you said. And again, as you're talking about this, Brian, it feels to me that it's also kind of an invasion in one sense, or a colonization of the mind in regards to how they change people. And again, if they only are interested, at least for now, to educate leaders, and we have this system where we're having right now, where local decisions and so forth are giving up to a more centralized government, be that the EU or on a national level, it feels like it's very, very difficult to get in there in that sense and change that in some way. And what would you say to that? Do you feel that it's possible to break people out from that might have gone into a Common Purpose, or what do you see as a way out of that?
You were a little bit difficult to hear again, but if I've got that right, you're asking me, is it possible to break people out of the Common Purpose system?
Yeah, exactly. That's the gist of it.
Right. The answer to that is yes. But we have to do something more important than that at the moment. Common Purpose penetration and control is now so strong that we have whole cities in UK that are controlled by Common Purpose. Plymouth is one of them, Sheffield is another one, Liverpool, Manchester. We've got massive political control taking us towards a new society, a post-democratic society, and that is being driven through the fabric of our local government by Common Purpose graduates, and we can show this happening. They are so firmly entrenched, and they are now moving the process forward so quickly, that the most important thing for us to do, in my opinion, is not to try and convert people who've already been got, but to warn people and to show the wider public and hopefully the political system what is actually being done in the midst of our society.
Yeah.
Because once you see what's being done, it becomes so obvious, and then you say it's very easy to counter it, because we simply block those people, or perhaps they're going to be gently removed from their job. They're to be controlled, which will stop the problem. And once we've blocked them, moved them sideways, the moment is now so fast and accelerating that we haven't got time to actually go to retrain, reframe these people.
Hmm.
Can it actually be done? It can, and again, I'm going to say that I'm learning from people who are properly trained in neurolinguistics, but it is possible to unscramble people, but it's got to be done very gently and very carefully, because if it is done in the wrong way, you run the risk of the person suffering some form of adverse mental effect.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I'll just add one more thing.
Yeah.
For the ordinary person, if I've frightened a few people, and I don't mind doing that because I can tell you that what we are trying to fight at the moment is unbelievably serious. But the best defense for an ordinary person to neurolinguistic programming is actually to understand a little bit about it. How do you neurolinguistically program somebody?
Mm.
There are a number of key steps, and I'm not claiming to be an expert in this. There are other people who advise me on this. But if you know at least some of the basic steps, you will instantly recognize them if you're with other people and they try and use the techniques on you.
Right.
But if I just summarize that, yes, it's possible to help these people that have been programmed, but in my opinion, what we've got to do first is correct the damage they're doing in society.
Mm. Brian, before we continue here, I want to check with you if you have the time for us to continue. There's so many more questions I want to ask you, and do you have time for an hour or two with us?
I'm going to say I would really like that, because one of the usual problems I have is that when things start to get interesting, and I like people to ask me a lot of questions because that helps me to explain things. So I would be very happy to do longer with you.
Okay, very good. Well, what we're going to do then is take a little break here and continue with hour two in a little while. But before we do that, Brian, I want you to leave out to people who are listening any websites where we can go for more information. I searched a little bit on it, and of course we can give out the official websites as well, so people can go there and check out. You can go to commonpurpose.org, or as you, the other site that you talked about, Brian, commonpurpose.net. There's also a commonpurpose.org.uk, I think. Your website.
There's commonpurpose.co.uk.
Right.
I think that's the correct address for their UK-based website. But you will also see quickly find websites for Common Purpose International. And perhaps this is something we can come on to a little bit in the next section.
Yes.
But I'd also like you to refer you to my website, which is www.cp, that's for Common Purpose, cpexposed.com.
Yep.
And also a newspaper that I'm running with volunteers to try and explain to people what's really happening in UK, and that is www.ukcolumn, as in Nelson's column or a newspaper column, ukcolumn.org. And there's one further one I'll mention, but perhaps I can do that towards the end of the show.
Okay, no worries. For now then, people can go to cpexposed.com or ukcolumn.org. And again, we will have these links up on redhouscreations.com, so you can click through from there easily and find both the official and the more critical unofficial websites about Common Purpose and read up on it and decide for yourself what's going on here. But we're going to continue talking more with Brian here in the second hour. So thank you very much for this segment. Brian, stay with us. We'll take a short break right here, and we will be right back.
Who is it?
Richard Paley.
Who is it?
Are you Richard Paley?
Who?
Who wants it? Congratulations, Richard. You've had some very interesting scores on the first series of tests for Parallax.
Testing for what?
Parallax Corporation. You did apply for our training, did you?
Oh, Christ, yeah.
As you know, Parallax receives demands from all phases of industry. Demands for unusual personnel. If you qualify, and we think that you can, we're prepared to offer you the most lucrative and rewarding work of your life.
What do you get out of it?
We receive a sort of a finder's fee. As I said, the jobs are difficult to fill. How tall are you?
6'2". What kind of jobs are you talking about?
I think whatever you're cooking on that stove is burning.
Might as well come in.
I'm Jack. Jack Younger. But we do like to be on a first-name basis with any of our potential candidates as soon as possible. You look taller than 6'2".
Yeah, what the fuck does my height have to do with anything?
Put some ice on it. It'll stop the sting and the blister.
I know your tests suggest that you have remarkable talents.
Yeah, what do you mean by talents?
You have difficulty holding on to a job, don't you?
I don't know. I just don't like to take a lot of shit, so people say I got antisocial tendencies.
Right. But tell me, has it ever crossed your mind that maybe it's everybody else's problem that they don't get along with you?
Why?
Because, you see, the very quality that gets you in trouble is what makes you potentially invaluable.
What's that?
Your aggressiveness.
Aggressiveness. Right.
I don't want to intrude on you while you're reading. Get in touch with me personally if you'd like to go further.
It's been a pleasure, Richard.